You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of June 5th, 2019. And E3 is 1 week away. Let's talk about Yarn.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And George is about to be consumed by video games, mind, body, and soul.
Oh, God, save me.
T-minus 1 week, less than 1 week and counting. The Electronic 3 will be devouring George whole.
Yep, that's right.
So what better way to memorialize him than to talk about what we've been playing before he is smothered by a digital avalanche.
I mean, I won't be able to play any video games for 2 weeks, I guess, you know? Unless that game's on the Switch. I'll be playing Final Fantasy VII.
Just like, oh man, like when I'm on the train playing Final Fantasy VII, at some point I'm self-conscious, but then I decide to just embrace my inner weeb and just continue to fight Sephiroth or whatever.
Yeah, you know,
listen to his weird soliloquy. That'll be you, but just on the show floor while there's some techno music pounding and a huge like army of tanks, a world of tanks banner behind you.
Oh God. Have you ever been on public transportation and realized the audio for your Switch was on like really loudly?
It wasn't that loudly, but it was loud enough that I'm sure people could hear my, my headphones were not in all the way.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I realized people were just probably jamming out to the Ape Out soundtrack.
Well, sometimes I'll listen to podcasts while like playing Smash. And
oh,
I
yeah.
realized the other day that I had been playing Smash out loud for like 30 minutes on the bus. I mean, thankfully I was winning. So I feel like, you know, everyone knows now, don't fuck with that guy in seat number 12.
Well, and no matter how many times you spammed it, no one decided to show me your moves, so they couldn't even rise to the occasion.
I am still waiting for the day where a stranger challenges me to a Smash battle.
Oh my God, that would be so great. And then you'd have to like detach the Joy-Cons and use them in the side mode because
on
the local network.
That's definitely true, yeah.
Anyway, before we dip into E3 land, we're just going to talk about what we've been playing recently. Some check-ins on games we have been playing and some games that we haven't talked about yet on the podcast. And George, why don't you kick us off? What have you been playing?
Sure. So I will start us off with a sci-fi game that I played recently. To completion, I might add, I finished it. Thank you very much.
I'll take my medal.
That game is called Observation. And this was published by Devolver Digital recently.
Nice.
And it's developed by No Code. And this is a sci-fi game where you play as the AI on board of a space station.
Mm-hmm. And are you ordering people around or are you being ordered around?
You are ordered around. I mean, here's the thing. You serve a purpose on the spaceship and your mm-hmm. job is to fulfill that purpose. So when the main character tells you, I believe your name is Sam, and it stands for something like, you know, spaceship something machine or whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. It's definitely not that. It's much better than that. So don't judge the game for my idiocy. Oh, it's System Administration Maintenance.
Oh, that's a good technical future sci-fi IT name. I like that.
Yes. So they're always like, Sam, you know, the connection is down in Pod Bay 6. Can you open the doors?
And you're like, I'm sorry, Hal. I mean, what?
What? So, yeah, they'll ask you to do some mundane things, right? So one of the very first things that you do in the game is to just calibrate the voice of the main character.
Mm.
And a lot of the ways that you interact with the world are very, very simple. So in the case of recognizing and checking on someone's voice pattern, you just hold down the left thumbstick and it scans it, and then you can accept it or not accept it.
Okay.
Sometimes they'll ask you questions like, can you identify, you know, where's the location of the captain? What are their vital signs?
Mm-hmm.
And you have your own UI and you could navigate it, find the captain in your crew log, see what data you have access to, and then relay that data back to the main character who's asking you to help her out of this sort of bizarre scenario.
Mm-hmm.
But the game is much weirder than that.
Mm-hmm.
It is, let's see if I can think of a good, you've seen that movie Moon?
I know of it, but I have not seen it.
So in Moon, I'm not going to spoil it because I actually think it's a great piece of sci-fi and I highly encourage anyone listening to watch it. But it is ostensibly a normal space station, but then something weird happens where it's very obviously something is up, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't want to spoil anything about observation, but something happens to this space station and there's only one crew member around who can help you out and ask you to do things.
Right.
The rest of the game starts unraveling in these really bizarre, surreal things. Not to anyone's surprise, all is not right on the observation.
Are you telling me something has gone wrong on this space station?
Well, and it's not just like Apollo 11, something has gone wrong. It's like existentially, like very, very hard sci-fi, something has gone wrong on the space station. And it's really cool. I think for at its weakest points, it becomes a sort of trial and error puzzle game.
I was just going to say, like, if you are completely reductive about it, is it essentially an adventure game?
100% adventure game. Yes. Yeah. And there are quite a few moments when it feels as though you're just poking around looking for the thing that gets you to that next moment, right? Mm. Like, I spent an uncomfortable amount of time realizing that I had to interact with, say, a ventilation shaft. And I was just navigating this spaceship for a super long time trying to figure that out.
Right.
So most of the game, actually, early on, you are only moving between cameras. Mm-hmm. And then you can move that camera to scan the environment. You could zoom in on, say, laptops and scan the contents of that laptop. You can find, like, codes that you then have to use to unlock doors, things like that, right? Eventually, you can inhabit, like, essentially an orb that will float through the space station. And at that point, it becomes a first-person adventure game where you're literally just floating through the space station, interacting with things as though you were an inhabitant of the spaceship, but you're really just a mobile camera. Mm-hmm. I actually think that is some of its weaker moments because being an AI is actually kind of cool. Like, that's not something I've really seen before in a game. And I really like the idea of having responses to people that are specifically inhuman. Like, when Sam responds to Emma, it's not like, hey, Emma, what's up? It's me, Sam. You know, like, Sam is not programmed, like, trying to be human. He's very much an AI.
This isn't Alexa.
Yeah, and so all of the way that you interact with the world are very matter-of-fact. No matter how strange things are getting, it just, you're a very matter-of-fact agent. Mm. And in that way, it's really just, you're really just observing the events as this neutral AI that, you know, may or may not remain neutral during the duration of this game. Right. And that's a fascinating experience. So I think even at its weakest, the game is super interesting and definitely worth your time.
I mean, the visuals are also very striking. I like the, it looks very practical. You know, like, it looks like our space stations look today. You know, it looks like mirror on the inside.
Oh, absolutely. You know? And you eventually leave the space station and go outside, and you have this amazing view of a planet that I will not name, and a view of the space station and, like, all of its moving parts. And, yeah, it 100% looks realistic. You know, even the mundane things that you do, I think, do a really good job of setting the atmosphere. Yeah. Like, when you depressurize the cabin to open the doors to lead outside, and then when you come back in, you have to go through that same process. Repressurize the cabin, lock the doors, open the door to the inside of the facility. It's cool, and it's a really neat way of interacting with that space in a way that I just haven't seen before. In a way, it almost reminded me of, like, Her Story or something.
Because I was just going to say, it looks kind of like it. Even, like, the UI, there's some mock-up UI that looks very future NASA, you know?
Yeah, it just never breaks the conceit that you are an artificial intelligence that has been designed to just help out on this space station.
Yeah.
And it takes that core conceit and stretches it to a really satisfying limit.
Yeah. Do you have a sense of how long it is?
That's a good question. I probably, if I recall correctly, maybe 3 to 4 hours. It's pretty short. Yeah,
that's. I mean, that's cool. Then it's also a self-contained sci-fi story. It's, you know, it doesn't have to carry the weight of a huge multi-hour experience. You know, it can tell a story and get out. I like that idea.
You know what it actually reminds me quite a bit of is I forget what the name of that game is, but Fulbright.
I was just going to ask, Tacoma. Is there a Tacoma like vibe to this?
It's very much like Tacoma, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But where Tacoma, because Tacoma is great because it does lean into you are just looking and observing the mm-hmm. events that happen on the space station. Tacoma feels different because there are so many characters interacting with one another. And right. much of that game is like learning about that relationship between yeah. them. This game, there's really only one main character for most of the game. This astronaut by the name of Emma. Mm-hmm. And it's really more, it almost feels more like The Martian or something, right? Like she's yeah. stuck, nothing is working, and you as the AI have to help her both get the station back in working order, but then also sort of investigate what's going on generally yeah. On yeah. the ship.
It's cool that there's, it's that part of the, I mean, what's that thing where, you know, there's like three different types of stories, like man versus man versus beast, man versus nature or something like yep, that. Like yep. a lot of space, there's a lot of sci-fi out there that is essentially man versus nature, which is like, I'm stuck out here or like something has gone wrong and I have to figure out how to get through this scenario with the tools I have at my disposal. And that yep. seems like what this is tapping into, which is a cool space story that we don't often get because usually our space stories are, you know, kill as many aliens as possible.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm glad Tacoma came up because I do think that if someone is listening and was a big fan of Tacoma, this is right up their alley.
Nice. All right. Well, from space to yarn, let me talk to you about crafting yes. with Yoshi. I have played, this was a little while ago. I probably finished the game, you know, several weeks ago or months ago, actually.
I'm surprised we haven't talked about it yet. Yeah, I'm excited to hear about this.
So I played Yoshi's Crafted World, which came out on the Switch maybe March or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I want to say I finished it, but I don't think I actually saw every stage because at the end it unveils these, you know, much more difficult to reach stages. And that's kind of my big knock against the game, which is it's very, very simple and straightforward until the end game. And then it kind of punishes you for breezing through the beginning of the game because
it's like, you fucking idiot.
Yeah, exactly. You should have been collecting all those things because now we're going to charge you to get into these worlds. And it's yeah. like, oh, man, like if I would have known that, I would have been collecting way more flowers this whole time. You know,
you mistook my soft texture for ease.
Yeah. And really, I've just enveloped you and now you're drowning in debt from these flowers. You need to pay me.
So is the idea is that you have to collect a certain number of widgets in order to unlock those extra levels?
Yeah, I mean every subsequent world requires you to get a minimum number of flowers, and every stage has I forget the exact number, but it's, you know, there's like six flowers that you can find. There's a couple flowers that you can get for certain coin challengers. There's another set of flowers that you can get for going through the stage in like this kind of behind the scenes reverse way, which is cool. But, you know, the flower cost is very nominal up until the point where you beat the game and get into these like end stage level stages, and then it gets really expensive and it's like, then, oh, it's, man,
show me the flowers, Scott. Okay.
And these stages are much more difficult and challenging. I would say like this up until those stages, the challenge of this game is much more of a platformer that is This is a pixel hunt game disguised as a platformer, and then all of a sudden the end stages are like, okay, this is some real platforming challenge, and so it's kind of a switcheroo at the very, very end.
This is kind of how I felt about Woolly World and Kirby's Epic Yarn.
I don't know if I ever played Woolly World, but that sounds very similar.
Yeah, because it's almost zen-like in its mm-hmm. easiness, and then when it's not, it's cool. I mean, you really have to like think it out, but at that point you've already dumped like 20 hours into a game that you increasingly think is a children's game, and then yeah. you're like, oh, am I really getting everything I want out of this game?
Yeah. It's a weird, and it's not a bad game. There's just a weird tension in it, and the other Nintendo games have done this. For example, Super Mario Odyssey, those end game stages after you finish the game and go back into the extremely difficult stages on the moon and stuff are crazy, but the ramp is not as great. You know, the curve right. is not as great. And this is just much different.
Do you think it's because of the aesthetic? Like, they have to make it accessible and approachable. Yeah, I mean, kind of, because it's yarn, right? Like, it looks adorable, therefore it must be more accessible.
I mean, I think, and this is to say, this is taking nothing away from the gameplay, but I do think the strongest part of this game is the visual style. I mean, they doubled down on yarn and added things like cardboard and crumpled up paper and styrofoam cups. Everything has this very tactile look and feel. And there's a creativity to it. Everything is basically a diorama, and there are themes in the level where, oh, okay, this level, it looks like everything was built out of cardboard, or this level was much more about found material, you know, pencils mm-hmm. or trash or whatever. And there's just these cool little things like, oh, they made waves out of crumpled up construction paper. That's a clever way of making waves. Like, you could see how that could exist in the real world, which is a cool thing.
Right.
And then on those other levels, that once you beat every level, there's these three annoying little dogs named Poochie that you can go back into the level and find them and then take them to the, you know, rescue them and take them to the end goal.
Take them to the pound.
Take them to the pound and they just go away, never to be seen again.
Oh, weird. I wonder what happens to them.
They're frolicking on the moon. Don't worry. You'll see them cool. someday. but what they do is they basically reverse the level and put you behind the scene. They put you in the background of the level and flip the whole thing as if you're rotating it 180 degrees if you're looking
That's
at it
pretty
sideways.
Cool.
And so you kind of see the backstage of the stage you were on. So
like
you
how
kinda,
it was made? They're like
exactly,
all the tape
yeah.
and stuff?
Yeah, you see all the tape. You see the little posts that are holding up the decorations and the strings that are hanging the clouds from behind the scene. It's just a clever little way of basically doubling the levels, but doing it in a way that makes it feel like, oh, I can see how these things are actually constructed.
Yeah. Does that feel like its own unique level? Because that's pretty cool. I mean, it's not easy to build two levels on top of each other, right?
I mean, I will say I think that is one of the reasons why, I mean, it is difficult. And I think that's one of the reasons why sometimes the level design is very simple. One, because I think this game actually is meant to be an exploration thing rather than a platforming challenge. But I also think that it's just hard to build mirror levels and yeah. still have them makes. I mean, as a professional Mario maker, I know how hard it is to even build a fucking level that works from left to right, let alone the opposite direction, you know?
Yeah. 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 That's pretty cool though. I like that idea quite a bit.
Yeah. So I don't think I will get to every single additional stage that I could, just because it does require a fair amount of backtracking. But I think the game itself is very charming and clever and has some neat ideas that I could see popping up, you know, in a few different places down the line.
Yeah, that's the type of game that I wanted to check out, but I wasn't sure if I wanted to throw $60 on.
So. Yes, yeah. Well, and also time. I mean, I for as charming as this game is, something like Observation will show you things that are more novel. Whereas this, you know what you're getting, and you're getting a very polished thing. It's just, it is what you expect it to be, you know?
Right. Did you play on the Switch?
I did.
Okay, cool.
And it's very fun. There's a lot of funny outfits for... in every level, there's basically these gachapon machines where you put in some coins to get capsules out, and inside of each capsule, there are... costumes that Yoshi can wear that are made out of, you know, cardboard or any other found material.
Yeah.
It is the most innocuous version of a loot box that I've encountered because it's basically a blind roll. Like you put the coins in and you see what kind of costume you get out of it.
What's the sweetest costume you found?
There was a samurai costume that I found very amusing. Dope. There was one where it was like a full car, like a Cadillac style car that Yoshi was like in the middle of just walking around.
Hell yeah.
And they're also, they have gameplay elements. Like all of them really add extra hits that you can take before they break. And then you start taking actual damage, you know, from your health bar.
Yeah.
But they are color labeled. So, oh, this one's a gold one. It can take 5 hits. Oh, this one's only a blue one. It can take 3 hits. And so there's like this tiny little loot mechanic inside.
Like a little incentive
too.
In order to get the dopest set from the random box. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's funny.
Sweet.
All right. What else?
Okay, so I've been playing this game. I think it's been pretty popular, actually, recently. It is called A Plague Tale, colon, Innocence.
Lies.
I don't know if maybe... Are they planning on doing, like, less innocent Plague Tales? I don't know.
A Plague Tale. Guilt.
This is by Asobo Studios, who I had never heard of. And so I looked them up. And apparently they've made a lot of, like, random... Not knockoff. That's an offensive term. Licensed games. So they made like Ratatouille. They made the WALL-E game. They didn't make the Crew.
Wait. They made Ratatouille.
They made in 2007. They made a Ratatouille game for THQ.
Oh my god! Yep. This is them exercising their demons.
Yeah, they did make the Crew for Ubisoft. They also made ReCore, which was a Microsoft exclusive.
Oh wow! I remember that game.
Before A Plague Tale, the last two games they worked on was Disneyland Adventures and Zoo Tycoon Ultimate Animal Collection.
So, I'm sensing an animal thread throughout their work, though.
Well, what this is, this is exact when you find those studios, right, where they go, oh, we do all of this other work to subsidize the times where we can be creative. This is the work that they've subsidized. And it's very good. It's very good. So this is a game where you play as a young French girl named Amicia who has to carry her brother around as they escape from a castle that is both under the control of the British Inquisition in France. And there happens to be a plague going on. Part of the spread of this plague is due to rats.
Like any classic plague.
Hence A Plague Tale, right? There are a lot of rats. When I say that this game has a lot of rats...
think about how many rats you can imagine. And then think about more.
And now quadruple that... It is a stupid number of rats. So my coworker suggested I try this game, and I picked it up pretty blindly, having no idea what the same sort of basic premise was, right? I just went into this blind, which is, by the way, a fantastic experience for video games. I highly recommend it. The first time rats show up in this game, they come out of like a hole in the ground, and fuck me, there are a lot of rats. Like, a stupid amount of rats. It becomes very clear that there was a group of people that spent an obscene amount of time working on, like, their rat tech, you know, like the swarming behavior of rats. And someone was like, that's freaking cool. Let's build a story game around it. Right. And that's what A Plague Tale is. It is a tech demo for an obscene number of rats. And then on top of that is an actually pretty cool story game. The actual experience of playing it is kind of like a mix of... It's kind of like a weird mix of God of War, because you have this boy that you're always carrying around. Boy. Like, you have this brother that you have to literally hold his hand most of the game. Then there's a lot of stealth elements. So the Inquisition, you know, will be looking out for you, and you can hide in tall grass. You have a sling, which is basically a super-powered weapon in 18th century France or whatever. and you can use the sling to, say... hit a guard in the head and kill them. You can use it to knock out a light, which I'll explain why that's important in a second. You can also throw pots to get their attention and then sort of stealth around when they're distracted. So a lot of the game is that stealth experience. The other side of it is a puzzle experience where, you know, you're moving blocks and you are sort of solving the stealth puzzle as well, where you need to, you know, open a hatch and then quickly move before the hatch closes down and stuff like that.
It kind of has a Hellblade look almost to it.
That's another good comparison, actually, because Hellblade, man, what a fucking great game Hellblade is.
Let's pause for a moment and say what a great game that was.
It's not as good as Hellblade. Hellblade is very, very good. It's not as good as Hellblade. But so the rats come in because the rats are basically like walking piranhas. Like, if they touch a human being, they will fucking devour that human being in seconds. It is actually pretty phenomenal to watch, to be perfectly honest. Because you can do these things where, you know, the rats are scared of light. So a lot of the puzzle involves how do you turn on lights in a sequence to get through the rats, right? Like, you might grab a torch, but the torch will only last so long and will wear out, and so you'll have to make it to the next light source. you will have, there's a bunch of like alchemy that you can do in the game, which essentially says it means turning your rocks and your sling into like a fire starter, for example, where you will throw a rock and then light a bonfire, which will then move the rats away. You can knock out the lanterns that guards are holding, which will have them be swarmed in rats.
Oh,
in
my
this
God.
Horribly grotesque fucked up scene where rats just devour your enemies, which is like a very common thing that you start to do in the game.
Yeah.
And they add on additional elements and they add on more and more puzzle challenges. You know, I just did a castle where I had to move a bunch of rats and funnel them into a pit by, you know, moving lanterns and stuff. So there's a lot of that. But on top of all of that is actually a quite good story with these, essentially a cast of like four kids. It's almost like it's almost like the Goonies or something, right? Like you have this ragtag group of kids where, you know, one's like a nerdy alchemist. One is our young heroine. One's her younger brother who's like got this crazy disease. And then there's like some spy stealth sort of rogue that's on your squad. The voice acting is quite good. And yeah, it's
good. Do I see a Sean Bean appearance in this trailer?
Is he in it? I don't know. I don't think so. If he is, he might be in it for but a brief second because I have not encountered him.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I just saw a quick trailer of it and it looked like Sean Bean. But even if he is...
He's there in spirit.
Well, it's contractually stipulated that he die at some point in the movie / game. Like, that's just kind of what Sean Bean does. So.
Probably rats.
Yeah.
Can I go off on a tangent real quick, actually?
Okay.
So I was playing this game the other day, and the game takes place in France, and all of the main characters speak with French accents, and the game was made in France, right?
Okay.
So I said, I'm going to play this game in French. So I turned on the voice acting to be French voice acting. Very satisfying at first. And then when I encountered British soldiers, the British soldiers also spoke in French.
Oh.
And my immersion was broken. So my question to you is, like, what is the right way to play this game? Because what I really wanted was, I wanted our main characters, who were French, to speak in French.
Everyone speaks British, in their native language.
Yeah. And I realized, man, like, this is not an option I see in video games very often.
Yeah.
You get it in movies where, you know, you will have a, you'll watch a film where, you know, half the film is in a different language and they subtitle it, but all of the English is not subtitled because I'm an English speaker and that's sort of the experience, right? That is the most immersive thing. So part of me says I should play in French because the main characters are French. They speak in French. The studio is French. But when I hear British soldiers speaking in French, I'm like, well, that's not really accurate. And I can't tell if their French is French with a British accent.
Right.
Because, like, what is that? I don't know. Like, I don't know what that sounds like, you know?
Yeah.
So it's almost easier for me to listen to their British accent in English and then go, oh, right, British. They're the Brits.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, they're assholes. And
then
they
do a French accent, too, if the main characters are talking?
Yes, all of the French characters speak with a French accent in English. And I should say, it's good voice acting. But for that truly immersive experience, wouldn't it be nice to have the setting so that I can make the French people speak in French and the English people speak in English?
Can I put everyone in their little boxes?
Well, I mean, this is, we're talking near like 1700s or whatever, 14 something in France. I have no idea when the game takes place. I feel like it makes much more sense to have everybody speak their own language.
Right.
It's more true, especially when they're like talking shit about the English, you know?
Right.
Like, the English are the imperialist force here.
Yeah. What, does the voice track of the rats change? Are they like, oi, squeak, mate, and then le squeak.
No, it's just this constant shittering. Yeah. It's genuinely
horrifying.
Rats.
That's all I care about.
Man, I mean, honestly, that's... If you are into rats, this is the game for you, my friend, because there are a lot of rats.
Like, it looks great.
The game is also gorgeous, and there's a few scenes where, like, I came upon a battlefield, and it's a massive battlefield. Just an absolute obscene number of, like, bodies on the ground and like pieces of wood. Like, clearly there was a large scale battle here. There was a firefight. And then the music starts to change where I go, oh, the rats are coming.
Oh, God.
And lo and behold, the rats just fucking everywhere, rats. And it's quite a marvel to see when you're actually looking at that many rendered rats on screen at once.
Right. The rat tech. Rat.
Very good.
Rodent ambulation tech technology. Yep. That stands for rat tech.
It's good. I like A Plague Tale. I'm having a good time.
All right. I'll do a quick one. I'm still playing Tetris 99 with regularity.
Cool.
People have gotten increasingly savage. I routinely place lower than I did when the game first came out, to the point where if I'm in the top 25, I consider that a good showing.
Ooh, wow.
Top 10 is like, okay, that was an outstanding showing, but it's not unheard of for me to get knocked out in like the 50 to 30 range, you know, with regularity.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but they recently added the ability to play offline, right, against AI?
For a fee.
What do you mean for a fee?
If you pay $9.99, you can unlock these other modes, and one of which is playing the Battle Royale with offline with AI, and then really? The other is a like an endless mode, like a much more traditional Tetris style.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. Do you get both for $9.99, or are they each $9.99?
I believe you get both. I still haven't paid for it yet, but I think both are $9.99.
Because I was going to ask if you could train, like if that's your problem.
That would be. I mean, it doesn't. It's weird because when you're like, what is training in Tetris? Like training in Tetris is like playing Tetris, you know? Like,
yeah, that's true.
Except if you, you know what? Actually, no. It would be interesting. Kind of like a fighting game where you can go into the laboratory and be like, okay, today I need to practice.
Just square blocks. Just.
Like, seriously, like, I need to practice. I know for a fact, me personally, I need to practice my T-spins. I'm not good at T-spins. And if I was better at T-spins, I would be better at this game. Because
what is a T-spin? Is it just spinning a thing? Like an L block?
You know the T block, the one that is three across and one down, so it looks like a T?
Yes.
So a T-spin is when you wedge that thing into a space where you must spin it at the last second for it to fit.
Okay.
So, you know, like, let's say you have just a jumble where if you were to just drop it straight down, it wouldn't fit flush in a row.
Yeah.
Well, a T-spin is when you drop it down and at the very last second you spin it so that it is flush in a row.
So when you say you're bad at T-spins, your timing is off such that you either overspin or underspin the block.
Well, not only that, it's looking for the opportunity, you know, creating a scenario where you would use a T-spin in the same way that... you know, a classic tactic of Tetris is to keep one side, a single column, to keep that empty so you can just dump the lines down that column and just consistently get Tetrises. And there's these little patterns in Tetris where it's like the L blocks, you should make sure that they nest into each other instead of just kind of having these little teeth poke up and down. You know, you should make sure that they're flush with each other because they complement each other. So there's these little things about like looking at the Tetris board and understanding there is a strategy to this. And I know even my T-spin strategy is bad. You know, like I know I'm just not seeing them where they exist.
Yeah.
Whereas those other people that are just so savage at this game are probably seeing it, you know?
Yeah.
It's still great. It is not only a great Tetris, but it is an outstanding Battle Royale game. And they continue to support it. There was recently just a tournament where if you won enough points, you won a skin that reskinned it to the Game Boy graphics. Sweet. As well as the Game Boy soundtrack.
That's pretty cool.
So they're doing, you know, it in its own weird little way, it's also a live game, you know, with that stuff. Mean,
you getting worse against your competition, you're just, this is the natural journey of any Battle Royale game.
Yes, you know? It very similar to any Battle Royale / multiplayer game. Like the skill ceiling gets higher and higher.
Yep. We just need to find the next Battle Royale game so we can be good again for just a brief shining moment.
Dig Dug, Battle Royale, I'm going.
Hey, that'd be sweet. Are you kidding? Do you want to talk about Sekiro real quick?
Yeah, let's spend a couple minutes on Sekiro. Okay, where are you at Sekiro?
I'm at the final boss.
Okay,
I have been at the final boss, Scott, for seven years.
I've checked in with you off mic several times, and this is, I don't know, like going on what, like a month at the final boss?
I mean, at least. Let me put it this way, right? It has been busy at work, as the case may be, right? Yeah. And The boss has four stages.
Yep.
And it makes me want to pull my hair out. And the result is that every time I say, you know what? It's time to beat Sekiro. Mm. I realize when I say that, it's not the same thing as me saying, you know what? Time to play some Final Fantasy VII. Time to play some Smash right. Brothers. Time to play a rat game, right? Like, yeah. it doesn't work that way because there's an upfront just cost. There's multiple costs. One is just the muscle memory, right? Like, I've lost the muscle memory. So there's a time cost of regaining the muscle memory of just learning how to play, right?
Yeah.
On top of that, it's relearning the moveset and the timing of that particular boss, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's just the psychological trauma of knowing, like...
reopening this old wound.
Well, you know, like, look, when we map it out, right? Like, hey, you know, I get home at like 6:15, I make dinner, I eat dinner, mm-hmm. I watch some TV or whatever. Yeah. I sit down to play a video game maybe, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock. Yeah. I honestly believe that beating this last boss is going to take me 3 to 4 hours of just honest, good tries.
Right.
And that's on
unbroken, consistent tries. Yeah.
And that's being optimistic, right?
Yeah.
That's
if the moon is lined up correctly.
Well, like, I just don't have it in me, you know? Like, I get it. I've been through here. I know I can do it. Uh-huh. And I feel bad for saying, like, you know, I'm a huge Soulsborne fan. I need to do it. And I will do it at some point. But also, like, I think this is probably the worst of the Soulsborne games at this point. I've really turned sour on it quite a bit.
Interesting.
Having played through it. The last boss really pushed me over the edge, but I was having these feelings towards other elements in the game as well. There are some fights that stand out. Like, I love the owl fight. I love the horse fight. Like, there's certain fights that are up there with some of my favorite fights in all of the Soulsborne series, but as a whole, this isn't my favorite. And so if I said, you know what, right now, I would rather just go replay Bloodborne than spend 3 to 4 hours smashing my head against the final boss of Sekiro, I think I'd be making the right decision.
That's, I mean, you are far further than I am, but it has been an interesting journey and seeing what they're trying to do differently and second guessing some of the mechanics and just hearing about how the bosses develop. I can't really put my finger on it, but there is a different type of endurance that it seems like this game requires, that, again, similar to you, it makes me question, like, man, I'll probably see the end of it someday, but will it be anytime soon? Like, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. And I gotta say, this throws the year in a loop, because I think that there's a lot of games that have come out this year, including, you know, some of the ones I talked about today, like A Plague Tale and Observation. There's games out now like Void Bastards or Outer World, right? These games that I had not paid much attention to are getting a lot of buzz, and there's a lot of talk about these being some of the best games of the year and instant classics, right? Yeah. If I had to say right now what my game of the year is, like if we were to take a measurement halfway through the year, nothing on my list is what I would have expected to be on the list at this point. Like, there's no way in my mind that Sekiro is going to be in my top three games of the year when it comes down to it, because already there are games that I think are better than that, right?
Right.
Like, the top contenders for me is like something like Ape Out, which I think is just a small little near perfect gem of a game that I had, you know, I knew and was excited to play, but I would not have said was going to be one of the contenders of the best games of the year halfway through. And I know that there's a lot of year left. There's a lot of games that come out this fall, right?
Yep.
Last of Us 2 is coming out, and there's just a bunch of great stuff on the horizon.
Is Last of Us 2 coming out?
You know, I'll make my bet.
What I'll tell you is coming out? Death Stranding, baby. Oh. Got a release date.
I mean, touche. Everybody make room.
The big boys. Clear off your goatee list.
Kojima's doing a barrel roll right into the swimming pool. Like, yeah, okay, touche. But so, the number two and number three contenders for Game of the Year, still up in the air.
Best Baby of the Year.
Oh, did you see the collector's edition?
Oh, what? No.
It is the baby in the jar. It is, and not just that, it's very large. It is like a life-size baby in a jar. Which, one of the favorite things that I like about that is, I work in an industry where it's perfectly normal to have that thing on my desk. If you don't have the context for what that thing is, you are going to get some funny looks, my friend.
oh my god, this thing is crazy. Yeah. Sorry, I had to look at it while you were telling me.
The Kojima baby. The one thing I'm bummed out about is that there's not actually liquid in it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that would get very messy very quickly, but still, that is true. That's a compromise of Kojima-san's immaculate vision.
I mean, I can
zero out of ten.
I can fill it with my own liquid. You know, there's no law against that yeah. that I'm aware of. There could be.
I'll make my own Kojima amniotic fluid or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh my god, I can't believe that I cannot believe that they announced a release date for that game and that it's actually this year.
My favorite line was Kojima saying, "This is not a stealth action game." What did he say? Like, "This is not a stealth game. This is a game about making connections." Sweet. Okay, cool. Very descriptive and helpful, Kojima-san.
Well, those are the games that we've been playing. That is at least one of the games that we will be playing.
Yeah.
Things are going to get a little wacky with E3, so we'll see what happens. But regardless, we'll see you on the other side of it.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, with a full report from what happened. And we'll leave it there for tonight. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our rat den. Rats, 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 rats everywhere. Come on rats down. Bring everywhere. Your own rat. You can find... We have
BYOR.
There are many times the number of rats as there are episodes of this podcast, of which there are many. So keep that in
mind. And they'll all flow out of some unseen hole in the ground until it's too late. You'll be consumed by all the podcasts.
Consumed by the episodes.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao.